My very sincere gratitude to His Holiness Chandramali Swami Maharaj for sharing His priceless realizations with all of us. I am hoping everyone had nice, purifying experience bathing in Dhanushkoti today. How many of you, raise your hands please, walked all the way there? How many drove most of the way there? You are an amazing congregation of devotees, for sure. Whether you walk or drive, what is important is your consciousness. If you're walking thinking of sense gratification, it is not as sanctifying as driving in a prayerful mood, begging for purification. And, of course, vice versa as well. Srila Prabhupada was never very insistent on our focusing on difficult austerities. For him, real austerity was being enthusiastic, fearless, and faithful to carry out one's service for one's spiritual master in the Vaishnavas. As far as walking to Mansarovar and those types of austerities, they are nice, but really it's the quality of our consciousness, our absorption in Krishna, and our service attitude that is all important. Here in the holy place of Rameshwaram, we have been hearing the pastimes of Lord Sri Ram. Today, I was requested by one illustrious Vaishnav to speak briefly on a particular devotee of Lord Ramchandra, an amazing devotee who is considered one of the greatest of the saints of South India, and who Srila Prabhupada quotes many times. His name, Kula Shekhar. There are three in days of the past. There were three principal kingdoms in South India. Kanchipuram was the capital of the Chola dynasty. Madurai, the capital of the Pandya dynasty. And Trivandrum, the capital of the Chera dynasty. There was a king of the name Dhritavrata. He lived in Kerala, king of the Chera dynasty. He had no children. He worshipped and prayed to Lord Narayan for a child, begging that if that, send me a child who will be king and also a great saint. His prayer was fulfilled, and his son was the great Kulashekar. His father trained him in the arts of government, war, and also the Vedic literatures. He learned well. When he was a young man and his father saw that he was suitable to inherit the throne, his father, according to tradition, accepted vanaprast and entered into the forest. And then the ruler of the Chera dynasty was the great King Kulashekar. Following the tradition of his forefathers, every day the king would personally read a report of the kingdom before the deity Ananta Padmanabha, the prominent deity of Trivandrum, even today. In fact, they believed with complete conviction that it was Ananta Padmanabha who was the king. And whoever was serving in that role was only a trustee representative of the real king. Kulashekar ruled in that spirit. And he ruled well. He subjugated all of his enemies. He kept in a submissive state all minor kings who were serving under his sovereignty. And he was also very fair, very charitable. He treated everyone with great respect, and therefore he had the love and affection of all of his kingdom. He was a perfect ruler materially, but spiritually he was quite blind. He was thinking himself to be independent due to forgetfulness of his real relationship to God as eternal servant. He lived in this way for years, but by the grace of God, a transformation took place in his life. He began to see the emptiness and futility of materialism. He could see that arrogance and conceit, which were practically inseparable from a person who had virtues and opulences, they were disgusting, distasteful. He could see it in others, and he could see it in himself. And he felt that this type of arrogance was a chronic disease. Simultaneously, a sense of the beauty of spiritual life and the wonders of God and his incarnations were growing in his heart. So the general director who organizes so many affairs in the spiritual world, Vikshakshena, descended into this world and became the initiating spiritual master of the King Kulashekar. As he heard the scriptures, Kulashekar came to the conclusion that in today's world, men are simply slaves of their bodies, which are nothing but dead corpses. Srila Prabhupada, in that spirit, writes in Srimad Bhagavatam that what is our life? This body is simply a dead corpse flapping for a few seconds only. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Kulashekar was thinking, people are so much attached to this dead corpse, and they're relishing sensual pleasures as the all in life, and these joys alienate them from their real relationship with God. To associate with people absorbed in material affairs is like standing in a gallows and strangling oneself with a strong rope. To take pleasures in the great royalty of sitting on an elephant and a throne wearing a crown is like enveloping oneself in the midst of a blazing fire. I do not want a crown on my head that is given by another man. The only real crown that I want on my head is the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, let me follow in the footprints of Vibhishan and renounce this kingdom, renounce this family, renounce this whole world, and go to Sri Rangam. He was obsessed with the idea of renouncing everything he had and living the rest of his life in Sri Rangam. He wrote prayers, and everyone around him heard him speaking about taking shelter of Sri Rangam, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ranganath, is residing. But at the same time, he had his duties. So to pacify his heart, he invited sadhus into his palace. These sadhus were the Vaishnavas of the Sri Sampradaya. They would read to him the Vedas, the Puranas, the Itihastas, various scriptures. And he would spend major portions of his day just hearing spiritual truths from the devotees. And it was from these readings that he extracted the most priceless gems of the wisdom that he learned, in which he wrote his celebrated book, the Mukundamala Stotras, which Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas were very, very pleased to quote again and again. Daily, he relished with great attention the reading of Valmiki Ramayana. And he was so absorbed in these readings of Ramayana. Due to the awakening of love in his heart, he was not hearing Ramayana as some history that took place ages ago. He was hearing Ram's pastimes as if they were happening today. It was not his imagination. It was his love. So the person who was reading, he was explaining the passage of Lord Ramchandra in Nasik, Panchapati, and the story of Suparnaka, who had come to satisfy her passionate demoniac desires with Ram, and how to the only way she could obtain Ram as her consort is to kill Sita. And when, as she attacked Sita, Ram said, "Punish this evil woman." Lakshman, with his sword, cut off her nose. Now, even Rakshashi women are very fond of looking in mirror. And they like to see their face look nice. So this was a great insult. Not only was it was painful to her body, but worse, it was unbearably painful to her false ego to have no nose. So she was hysterical with anger. She ran and told her brother, Kara and Dushan, "This is what he has done. This is what that Ram has done." "What kind of brother are you? What kind of Rakshasa? What kind of Kshatriya are you? Sitting here while I'm suffering due to this disgrace. Go there and punish him." Karan Dushan were incited by the fury of Suparnaka. And they marched with 14,000 Rakshasa soldiers against Ram. When Ram saw them coming, he told Lakshman that you must protect Sita, and I will fight them alone. So those who have gone to Panchavati, and by the way, we will have a yatra there in the near future. There is a place which is the cave of Sita. You go underground to a cave, and that is where Lakshman hid Sita, a deep underground cave, and he stood in front of that cave guarding to protect her. And Ramchandra entered into the Janasthan alone. Kara, Dushan, Major Maharati Rakshasas with 14,000 well-equipped warriors. And Ram was alone. When Maharaj Kulashekar heard this, he went into a frenzy of ecstatic love. Ram is alone in the Janasthan against 14,000 soldiers, and Lakshman, he's not helping him. He's protecting Sita. It is his duty. I cannot tolerate this. I am Ram's bhakta. I am Ram's devotee. I cannot be sitting here in my kingdom comfortably when he's all alone battling against 14,000 Rakshasas. He commanded his armies immediately, "My entire army, bring all of your weapons, and we will march to the Janasthan, and we will be the side of Ram, and we will fight with him, we will guard him, we will destroy those Rakshasas." And he meant it. He took all of his most vicious weapons, and he boarded his chariot, And he had all his thousands and thousands of soldiers marching behind him. And they were going really fast because it was an emergency. The fight was already going on. His ministers didn't know what to think. This was a battle that happened a million years ago. It's from a book. But still, you know, he's the king. He's given his order. And all the soldiers are marching and they're... It's a long way from Trivandrum all the way to Maharashtra, Panchavati. And he was just faster, faster, and they were galloping and galloping and going and going. And ministers, our king has gone crazy. What are we going to do? So in an emergency, they sent an advance party, and they had to really go fast. And they went way up north, and then they came back down south, and they said, King Kulashekar, we have just come from the Janastan. We have just come from there. We have good news for you. Ram has slain single-handedly Kara, Dushan, and all the 14,000 Rakshasas. They are dead, and they are gone, and Sita is safe. King Kulashekar was feeling inexpressible joy. He was in bliss. He was crying that Sita is safe and Ram is victorious. Let us go back to our city. So they came back to Trivandrum. Now after that, the ministers advised the person who would read Ramayana every day, only read the happy parts. Do not read any part where Ram's in danger or anything sad, because we don't know what our king will do if you read that. So he would do that. But King Kulashekar, he was hearing everything in the present tense. Every day, according to the reading, there would be something Ram would do and Kulashekar would just be so much in euphoria. He would have a festival for the whole kingdom to celebrate what Ram had done, according to the reading. And he had a temple with deity of Ram and Sita and Lakshman also. And he would worship those deities with so much devotion. And every day there would be a festival. He would decorate the kingdom. He would have wonderful, wonderful celebrations and yajnas and music and dancing. And he would, at the end of the festival, he would make a big feast for all the Vaishnavas. And then he would give in charity to all the common people. This happened every day, according to the reading. Now, one day, the reader was given an assignment somewhere else. So he was absent. He told his son to read. But he forgot to tell his son the policy that the ministers had made. So he was reading, and he read the part about Ravana abducting Sita. And how Ravana had killed Jatayu and then taken Sita to Sri Lanka, and there he was tormenting her. Again, he became uncontrollably emotional, in a frenzy of ecstatic love. He just jumped from his seat and he said,
Ravanan, Rakshasas, I will personally march with my soldiers and I will annihilate your entire dynasty. You are giving pain to Sita, the goddess of my heart, the love of Ram. He commanded his entire army to march to the sea to attack Sri Lanka. He picked up his sword and was roaring as he led his armies forward. The ministers didn't know what to do. The soldiers, all they could do was obey. So he marched. His eyes were so angry. He was crying out, Sita, Sita, I'm coming for you. I will personally bring you back into the loving hand of Ram. And I will destroy that ten-headed demon, that cowardice, Rakshasa, Ravana. On this very day, with this sword, I will cut off all of his heads. He will die at my hands. Everyone was listening to him. The army marched all the way to the sea. And he just ran right into the sea with his sword over his head. Hare Krishna. Entered the sea. And all of his ministers and soldiers, they didn't know what to do. He was going deeper and deeper into the sea until he was up to his neck. He couldn't walk any further. But he was committed and determined to swim to Sri Lanka with his sword. And if the soldiers didn't follow him, it didn't matter. He was not going to sit comfortably anywhere while Sita was abducted in the Ashok Grove of Ravana. So all of his people, they were staggered with disbelief. They were stunned. They did not know what to do. He was on the verge of death. He was swimming the ocean with his sword above his head. It was critical. But he gave his life, his soul, his everything to Lord Ramchandra. He worshipped him with love. And the Lord always protects his devotee. There was no other way to save King Shukulashekar. He personally saw Ram and Sita coming from the direction of Sri Lanka toward him. And Ram called out to him in a very joyous voice, "The war has just ended. I have just killed Ravana. And I have destroyed the entire Rakshasa dynasty. I have coronated my own devotee, Vibhishan, as the king of Lanka. And I am reunited with Sita. You see, here she is, holding my hand. My dear Kulashekar, it is because of your prayers that I was victorious. But now there's no need for you to go. The war is over." But meanwhile, Kulashekar was so deep in the water, Ram personally lifted him up in his own arms and brought him to the shore. Just as the Supreme Lord Sri Ramchandra lifts his devotee from the ocean of birth and death and brings to the shore of his eternal abode. Sri Ramchandra Bhagavan Ki Jai! The ministers didn't know what to do with their king.
He had gone mad. But he was ruling the state. They considered that he had a mental disease. And what was the cause of the disease? His associating with Vaishnavas. That they were just making him mad. And his associating with Vaishnavas was the major part of his life. He was inviting these sadhus to come and live with him. And he gave them every possible freedom and facility within the kingdom. They could just go anywhere and do anything they wanted because they were Vaishnavas. In fact, they could come and see him anytime, anywhere. If he was sitting in a royal court or assembly room, if a Vaishnav came, he would just stop the whole conference with his ministers, whatever important, and just talk Hari Katha with the Vaishnavas. They were just coming in and out, and there were hundreds of these Vaishnavas all over the place. And they saw that the king, he loved the Vaishnavas. He worshipped the Vaishnavas. Before he would even worship his deity in the temple, he would first honor, serve, and worship the devotees. And it was because of their Hari Katha and Hari Kirtan that he had become mad. He had become crazy. We have to do something. But at the same time, if it wasn't for those Vaishnavas, then the king would definitely leave his kingdom, renounce everything, and go to Sri Rangam. The only thing that pacifies him enough to stay in his kingdom is the Vaishnavas singing Hari Katha and giving association. So what to do? If the Vaishnavas leave, we lose our king. And if the Vaishnavas stay, our king is just mad after Ram and he doesn't think about anything else. So they were really considering this. The kingdom was in a state of emergency. They assembled together what to do. They made a plot. The only way to salvage our king is we must break his faith in the Vaishnavas. If we break his faith in the Vaishnavas, we'll also break his faith in going to Sri Rangam. Because that's all Sri Rangam is about, living with Vaishnavas. So what they did is from the deity's jewelry box, there was precious ornaments made out of priceless jewels that decorated his deity every day. So they stole a beautiful, costly, bejeweled necklace from the deity's treasury. Then they reported to King Kulashekar that your lord, the deity's jewelry, is being stolen. And we have made a major investigation and we have found that it is Vaishnavas who have done it. They are culpable. They are the ones that dress the deity. They are the only ones that have access to that treasury. There's no one else that could have done it. We have caught them red-handed. It's the Vaishnavas that have done. And therefore we are going to take them to trial and we will punish them. When King Kulashekar heard them speak like that, he became extremely enthusiastic to state what he felt in his heart. In a loud voice, thundering with emotion, He said, a lover of God is incapable of stealing from the deity.
This is simply impossible. It's impossible
for a great devotee to even think of sinful things, what to speak, of act in that way. These are holy men. These are people who have given their hearts and their lives to the service of God. They are living by the holiest virtues.
I swear by their innocence. And just to show you my conviction,
he called one of his assistants, bring me a vessel with a venomous cobra. They brought him a vessel, a pot, with a deadly cobra inside.
He said, I will stick my arm in this vessel at this very moment. And I declare, if these Vaishnavas are innocent, there is no possible way that that cobra can cause any harm to my body. And I swear, if they are guilty, then that cobra will bite me with his venomous fangs, and I will die before you today. With these words, he plunged his arm
into the vessel with the deadly cobra. And he took his arm out and said, the lovers of God would never sin in this way. They are innocent. This was a very dramatic expression of his faith. His ministers bowed their heads at his feet and admitted their guilt, that actually we stole the necklace. They were so afraid. They were trembling to see what the king had just done. They said, we stole the necklace. It was our plot. We thought you were going crazy, so we just wanted to get rid of these Vaishnavas. We beg forgiveness. But King Kulashekar is a devotee of Ram. And he really followed in the footsteps of Lord Ram. Just as Lord Ram, when that crow clawed Sita's body and made her bleed, what could displease Ram more than that? He took a blade of grass and with a mantra, he tossed it at the crow and it became a brahmastra. That crow flew to every part of the universe to escape. But the blade of grass was always like death personified right behind it, until the crow came back and put its head at the lotus feet of Ram and Sita and begged forgiveness. Ram gave forgiveness and shelter to the crow, even though he did a dastardly deed. In the same way, King Kulashekar, he forgave them, did not punish them, let them go free. However, after this incident, he was thinking in his mind, no more shall I live with these vile, scheming ministers. What to speak of these ministers? This whole world of materialistic people is making me so weary.
I would rather
live in a blazing fire than be amongst men and women who have turned from God. King Kulashekar installed his son, who was given the same name as his father, Dhritavrata. He installed him as king. And King Kulashekar left behind that kingdom like Bharat Maharaj. He left behind all of his wealth, all of his fame, all of his prestige, like a person leaves behind stool on the ground. And he went to his cherished destination of Sri Rangam. And it was in Sri Rangam that he spent the rest of his life worshiping Lord Ranganath and serving the devotees. The king also brought his daughter with him. And King Kulashekar, in his devotion, married his daughter to Ranganath, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She was not an ordinary girl. Yes, for the rest of his life, he engaged in pure devotional service to the Lord and serving the devotees with great love. Sometimes he took pilgrimages to Tirupati, Kanchipuram, Ayodhya, Chitrakoot, these holy places. But his life, his soul, was Lord Ranganath. And to this day, King Kulashekar is one of the great, great inspirations for all Vaishnavas of all the four sampradayas. Let us bow our heads at the feet of this great soul. In regard to his daughter marrying Lord Ranganath, our Nityananda Prabhu asked me to say something about a similar personality who was so very prominent in South India. In fact, it is this month, yes? This month, practically all the Vaishnava temples and even Shiva temples dedicate this month to the great Alvar Andal. The Alvars are the legendary pure devotee saints of the Sri Sampradaya. Of them, Andal is the only one who was in a female body. In summary, there was a great devotee. His name was Vishnu Chitta. He had a garden of Tulsi. That was his whole life. He was a very simple Brahmin. He had a deity of Vishnu, and every day he would just grow Tulsis and pick Tulsis and Tulsi Manjaris and make garlands and then offer them to his deity. That was his life and soul. He didn't want anything else. except service to the Lord. And what serve in offering Tulsi to the Lord is so pleasing. There's a beautiful painting in Udupi where Narada Muni was going to take Krishna from Dwaraka. And the queens were very brokenhearted with the thought of imminent separation from Krishna. So they said, "We will give our most precious jewels to you, but don't take Krishna." So it was agreed. Give Krishna's weight in jewels. So Krishna sat on one side of the scale. And they just piled diamonds and emeralds and rubies and everything else and celestial jewels. But the scale didn't move. Krishna outweighed everything, no matter how much they put on. It was a hopeless endeavor. So they took all the jewels off. And it was Rukmini. She put one tulsi leaf in. And it outweighed Krishna. That is the power of the love of Tulsi Devi. Tulsi is an expansion of Brinda Devi, who is an expansion of Srimati Radharani from Goloka Vrindavan. She's the goddess of devotion. So pleasing is Tulsi Devi to Krishna that Prabhupada ordered that Tulsi worship take place in every temple throughout the world of ISKCON. Because it's such a purifying activity to the devotees to sincerely worship Tulsi Devi as the servant of the servant. In fact, in the mid-70s, Srila Prabhupada sent two Shalagram Shilas to New Vrindavan. And I was appointed to be the pujari that was to worship them. Srila Prabhupada dictated to one devotee instructions of how I should worship Shalagram Shila. He said, the names of these Shilas were Hiranyagarbha and Sudarshan Chakra. He said, you bathe them with water mixed with rose water. And then after drying them, you massage them with sandalwood oil. And then you put chandan and tulsi leaves. And then Prabhupada emphasized, first class deity worship means tulsi leaves. He said, first class Shalagram worship means tulsi leaves. He said, if you have nothing else, just offer tulsi leaves and your worship is complete. But you can also offer him, you can also paint a face on him with Gopi Chandan, and you can offer him a chadar, a dhoti, a crown, and a flute. But what really rang in my heart was Prabhupada's emphasis that first-class worship is tulsi leaves. And if you have nothing else, Krishna will be satisfied with tulsi leaves. And for installed deities on our temples, every preparation we offer must have a tulsi leaf on it, if they are at all available. So Vishnu Chitta, his life and soul was growing tulsi in his garden and offering those leaves and garlands to Lord Vishnu. One day, when he was digging in the garden, out from the ground came a most beautiful little baby girl. He named her Gouda, and she later became famous as Andal. Just as Sita appeared as King Janak was digging with a plow the field of sacrifice, Andal was born from the ground, or appeared from the ground of the Tulsi Garden. She was extraordinarily beautiful. The Sri Sampradaya, they believe that she is the incarnation of Nagnajiti, one of the eight principal queens of Krishna. If I remember right, Krishna had to defeat, seven bulls in order to win her hand in marriage. She had such extraordinarily gentle and pure qualities. So beautiful in every way, both internally and externally. As she grew up, she had an intense, passionate love for Krishna. As a little girl, she was feeling deep separation from Krishna. She would practically constantly be crying for Krishna. She would go mad in a very similar way to the gopis of Vrindavan. Sometimes she would be so absorbed in Krishna, she would start performing his pastimes. Krishna. She would ask the moon, she would ask the trees, she would ask the stars, "Have you seen Krishna?" She was genuinely immersed in the gopis' mood of separation from Krishna. And this is how she spent her life. Sometimes she would go to her father's puja room, where he would arrange beautiful tulsi garlands and tulsi mandiri garlands for the deity. And she would put the garlands on herself before they were offered to the deities. And she'd look in the mirror and see how beautiful she was with the tulsi garland on. And she would just marvel over how beautiful she was wearing this tulsi garland. She would just gaze upon herself. And then she'd put it back. And her father would offer to the deity. This went on for some time. One day, the father actually saw what she was doing. She was putting the garland on herself. So father chastised her. "This is boga. You cannot put the garland on before Krishna. This is an offense." So he did not offer the tulsi garland to Krishna that day. But that night in a dream, Lord Vishnu appeared to him and said, "Why did you not offer me a tulsi garland today? Every day you offer, why today you did not offer?" And he explained to Lord Vishnu that "my daughter, Gouda, she put it on. Therefore it's contaminated. I couldn't offer it to you." And Vishnu said, why do you say it's contaminated? If she put it on, then it has been sanctified. The fragrance of that Tulsi garland, after it touches your daughter's body, makes it all the more pleasing to my heart. In fact, I give you this order. From this day on, I will not accept any Tulsi garland from you that is not first worn by your daughter. So then he understood that Andal was a very special personality. And he took very seriously her intense love for Krishna. But the years passed. She was doing like this as a girl. And she became marriageable age. And her father inquired from her, you know, we must make arrangements for your marriage. But she was very, very firm that I've always already given my heart to Krishna. I will never marry any mortal man that is subject to birth and death in this material world. I have given my heart to Krishna. Father took her very seriously. He said, which form of Krishna do you want to marry? So there's 108 principal deities of Vishnu in South India. So he was reading the descriptions of each one of them. And at the very end, he described Lord Ranganath of Srirangam. And just by hearing about Ranganath, the ecstatic love of her heart just became overpowering. She went into ecstasy. She said, he is my life and soul. I can give my heart only to him in marriage. So the father was wondering, now what do I do? She wants to marry Ranganath in Srirangam. So the father had a dream. And Ranganath appeared to him and said, I hereby propose to you that I would like you to give me your daughter's hand in marriage. And at the same time, Lord Ranganath spoke to the leading pujari in Srirangam and said, I want to marry Andal. She lived in a village near Madurai, yes? Which is quite a distance. Ranganath told the pujari, you must arrange a royal wedding procession to bring her to Srirangam, where we will have our marriage. So they made a beautiful palanquin. And they had marching bands and Brahmins chanting and all sorts of other festivities. And the procession went all the way to this village near Madurai and right to the house of Vishnu Chitta. The people of Srirangam, everyone heard about this. This was something extraordinary. Ranganath's getting married to this girl from the south. And She came out of her father's house. It was a simple house. He was just a gardener. And she stepped into the palanquin. And because she was going to be the bride of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no other men should see her. No other eyes should touch her. So they had a beautiful palanquin with silken drapes all around so the sea could see out, but nobody could see in. And with wonderful music, and instruments, and the chanting of sacred hymns, she was brought all the way to Srirangam. And when she entered the city of Srirangam, the whole city was there to welcome her. It was an amazing festival. And they brought the palanquin right on to the altar. Then they opened the curtains. And Undulk came down from her palanquin. And when the pujaris and all the assembled Vaishnavas saw her beauty, they were astounded. It wasn't physical beauty. It was spiritual beauty. She was radiating spiritual energy. And with folded palms, Undulk, in a very shy way, she approached the deity of Ranganath. And then she ascended onto Anantashesha, and right in front of everyone's vision, her body merged into the lotus feet of Ranganath. Srila Prabhupada explains, we don't want to become one with God in all respects, in identity. The highest form of becoming one with God is to become one in love. And this was personified by Undulk. She merged into the eternal Leela of divine love with Krishna. Maharaj Kulashekar, following in footsteps, also married his daughter to Ranganath. I don't know the details on that one. Nityananda Prabhu probably does. Tomorrow, I believe we are going to bathe in the 24 Tirthas of Rameshwaram. Now, it is not mandatory. If it is your wish, you may bathe in the 24 Tirthas. Is anyone here know the schedule for tomorrow? Can someone who is a manager here call Radhakrishna Prabhu or Abhiram Prabhu and find out what we are supposed to do tomorrow? Govinda Prabhu, you will do? So we have told these stories, not stories, these sacred histories, because they so beautifully illustrate the Vyabashayatmaka Budhir Ekeha Kurunandana Bahushakahyanantascha Budhayo Vyabashayana. Our devotee wants to deeply absorb him or herself in the remembrance of Krishna and how the Lord reciprocates with the love of his devotees in such beautiful ways. Vaishnavism is the ultimate perfection of life. In fact, Vrindavan Das Thakur, he has written that to be called a Vaishnav and to receive the title Das or Devi Dasi is the highest platform. It is greater than being a king. It is greater than being a mystic yogi who has attained all perfections. It is greater than attaining mukti. It is greater than attaining the power of a demigod. Is attaining the title Das or Devi Dasi. Because this is what Vaishnavism is about. Not becoming God, or not competing with God in this world, but becoming the humble servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Because that through that service only does Krishna bestow upon us prema or love. To love God is the only desire of a devotee, and to serve those who love God. When Srila Prabhupada was asked, what service will please you the most? Prabhupada answered, to love Krishna. It doesn't really matter what service we do, whether we're washing pots, or whether we're preaching to thousands of people, whether we're a manager, or giving donations, or distributing books. What pleases Krishna most and what pleases Prabhupada most is whatever we do it in a spirit of love for Krishna. And it is that love that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has descended in this world to give. Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gaura Tveshe Namaha. He is most munificent of all incarnations because he's giving this love of Krishna so freely, without discrimination. We cannot imitate Andala Alwar. If we do, we're just a cheap sahaja. We cannot imitate Maharaj Kulashekar. If we do, we're just a false renunciate. But we can attain that same ecstasy of love of Godhead In fact, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is giving freely the ultimate state of love of God. Beyond Vaikuntha, the prema of the residents of Vrindavan. He is Radha and Krishna, who has descended to open the doors to Goloka Vrindavan to all of us. But we must be sincere. We must develop a proper attitude of service. We must develop a proper attitude of honesty and morality. And in this age of Kali, there's no other way to reach this love except through the chanting of the holy names. Kalera dosa nideja rajan asti heka mahanguna kirtanadeva krishnasya mukta sangha parabraja. In this ocean of faults of Kali, there is a benediction. One can attain the supreme perfection of liberation, the prema of the residents of Vrindavan, simply by chanting God's names. But how do we chant these names? We have to please Krishna through our chanting. Krishna doesn't have to appear in his name just because you want him to. You have to chant in a spirit that pleases him. Trinara bisuni chaina taro ibasi ishnana amani na manadena kirtani asadahari. We stress this because it's not simply an aspect of bhakti. It's the heart of bhakti. Humble like a blade of grass, tolerant like a tree, ready to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. Then we could chant the name constantly. There's no way around that verse. You cannot jump over that verse and reach Nadanam Najanam the Sundari. I do not want wealth. I do not want beautiful opposite sex. I do not want fame and fortune. I do not want liberation. I only want your unconditional service. You cannot pray that way. It's not possible. Unless first you sincerely surrender to Trinadapi Sunichena. It's like the gateway to ecstatic love. You have to get through that gateway. You can't jump over a wall. The walls are too high. You can't dig a tunnel underground. You have to go through the gateway of Trinadapi Sunichena. If we want to chant the name of the Lord in a way that Krishna will manifest his full potency in his name. So simple. But this is what Lord Chaitanya has come to give us. And when we hear about the wonderful leelas of the devotees who manifest ecstatic love of God in these Vaishnav sampradayas, it simply gives us great enthusiasm and hope in the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And how do we apply it to our lives? By learning how to sincerely take shelter of service to Guru and Vaishnavas and the chanting of the holy name.